Welcome back, everybody, for another deep dive. And today we're going to be talking about something that I think is really important for just about everyone, but especially if you are in therapy or have been in therapy, and that is microaggressions in the therapy space.
And something that, you know, we often hear a lot about generally in society and relationships, but it's interesting to think about, like, you know, how does it show up in therapy? Mm-hmm. And then what are the potential impacts?
Yeah. And I mean, the reason I think this is so interesting is because, you know, when we think about harmful things that could happen in therapy, we think about, you know, major ethical violations, right? Like breaking confidentiality or, you know, a therapist, you know, really crossing boundaries.
Yeah.
But what's so interesting about this research is it's saying that even these really subtle comments, these things that maybe, you know, someone didn't even mean in a harmful way,
right,
can actually be just as damaging.
That's what this research suggests.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it's a good opportunity to kind of challenge our assumptions about what we think is harmful versus, you know, maybe not a big deal.
Right. So I think it's helpful to maybe start by defining what we're even talking about here when we say microaggressions. What exactly do we mean by that?
Yeah. So, I mean, the researchers in this study that we're looking at today define microaggressions as these brief everyday slights. So they could be comments, they could be actions. But the important part is that they communicate some sort of hostility or derogatory message, or they're communicating some kind of negative stereotype.
And it's not always intentional.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Attention actually doesn't really matter here, because even if something is unintentional, it can still be a microaggression if it's communicating bias towards somebody based on an aspect of their identity.
And there are different types of microaggressions too, right?
Yeah. There are three main types that the research kind of breaks down.
Okay.
And I think it can be helpful to kind of think about the differences between these.
Yeah.
So the first type is called microassaults. And these are kind of the most blatant or overt types of microaggressions. So this would be like using a racial slur or making a sexist joke. Those are kind of the easier ones to identify.
Right.
And then we have micro insults, and these are more subtle.
Okay.
They're these kind of put downs or ways of implying something negative about someone's identity.
So more like backhanded compliments or something.
Yeah, exactly. And I think one of the examples that they use in the research is like, let's say you're a woman and somebody says to you, "Wow, you're so articulate."
I can see how that could be taken in a negative way.
Right. And so on the surface, it might seem like a compliment, but what it's implying is that it's surprising for a woman to be articulate.
Right.
And so it's kind of playing into these stereotypes that we have about, you know, women and intelligence or communication skills.
Right. Or, you know, maybe their leadership abilities or something.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the third type is called micro-invalidations.
Okay.
And this is where you're dismissing or negating somebody's lived experience based on their identity.
Huh.
So a common example of this is saying to a person of color, "I don't see color." And so while the intention there might be to, you know, communicate that you're not racist or that you see everybody as equal, what it's actually doing is invalidating that person's experiences with racism.
Right. Like their race is a part of who they are and how they've experienced the world.
Right. Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So those are kind of the three main types. And I think it would be helpful to sort of keep those in mind as we talk about this research.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's important to note, too, you know, therapy is hard.
Right.
Like there are going to be times where you disagree with your therapist or, you know, maybe a session feels a little bit tense or something.
Yeah. Definitely.
So how do we distinguish a microaggression from just, you know, a regular disagreement or a tough moment in therapy?
That's a great question. And I think it really comes down to, like, how is the person experiencing that interaction?
What?
So with a microaggression, the person who's on the receiving end of that comment or action, they connect that offense to a part of their identity.
Yeah. So it's not just that they're disagreeing with what's being said, but it's that they feel like they're being misunderstood because of who they are.
Exactly. It's like there's this extra layer of, you know, hurt or invalidation because they're feeling like they're being judged or stereotyped based on their race, their gender, their sexual orientation, any aspect of their identity.
So just really understand, you know, how impactful these microaggressions can be in therapy. These researchers, they designed a study where they asked participants to recall either a microaggression that they had experienced in therapy or the most severe offense that had happened to them in counseling.
Yeah, and that's what I think is so interesting about this study, because they're comparing those smaller things, you know, these microaggressions, which we often kind of brush off or tell ourselves it's not a big deal, to these really big offenses, you know, like a therapist violating boundaries or breaking confidentiality.
So we're talking about, like, you know, major ethical violations.
Yeah, exactly. And what they found was really surprising, because participants had similar negative reactions to both types of events.
Wait, so you're saying that people reacted as strongly to, you know, maybe a therapist saying, you know, a comment that felt a little bit off, right, as they did to a therapist doing something that, you know, was a major ethical violation?
That's exactly what this research is showing.
Wow.
And I think that that's huge, because it really challenges our assumptions about what we think is harmful, mm-hmm, you know, versus what we think is maybe no big deal.
Right. So what does this mean for people who are seeking therapy? You know, if these microaggressions are so common and they can have this lasting impact.
Well, I think it highlights just how important it is to find a therapist who you feel really safe with and who you can trust.
And someone who you feel like really gets you and understands your experience.
Right. Because if you're constantly questioning whether or not your therapist understands you or sees you for who you are, then that's going to really get in the way of the work.
So then how do we address that? You know, if these microaggressions are so prevalent and if they can have such a big impact, what can we do about it?
That is the million-dollar question. And that's what we're going to get into after the break when we talk about this concept of cultural humility.
Yeah, so stick with us. We'll be right back. Okay, so you're saying this idea of cultural humility is so important in therapy, but I think for a lot of people, it can be kind of a vague concept. So can you break down, like, what does cultural humility actually mean in this context?
Yeah, and I think it's, you know, a term that gets thrown around a lot, but yep, it's important to really understand what it looks like in action, right?
Yeah.
So it's not just about, you know, being nice to your clients or saying, like, oh, you know, I respect your culture or whatever.
Right.
It's really about an ongoing commitment to self-reflection as a therapist and a willingness to really learn from your clients.
So it sounds like it's more about, you know, an openness to understanding different perspectives.
Exactly. And recognizing that, like, you know, the client is the expert on their own experience.
Right.
And that you, as the therapist, are coming to that interaction, you know, with a certain set of assumptions and biases. And you have to be willing to kind of check those at the door and really listen to what your client is telling you.
So, you know, I've heard people say things like, I don't see color, or we're all just human, you know, and they're saying it with good intentions, right? They're trying to be inclusive.
Right.
But are those actually examples of cultural humility?
That's a great question. And I think it kind of gets to the heart of why cultural humility can be so challenging, because, you know, those statements might come from a good place, like you said, but they can actually be forms of micro-invalidations.
Hmm.
So, for example, when you say to somebody, I don't see color, you're kind of dismissing their racial identity,
mm-hmm,
and the very real experiences that they've had because of their race.
Right. So it's like you're saying that race hasn't had an impact on their life.
Right. And that's just simply not true.
Right. So how can a therapist, you know, actually demonstrate cultural humility in a way that feels genuine and helpful?
It's really about, you know, approaching each client with a sense of openness and curiosity.
Okay.
So asking questions like, you know, what are your experiences with, you know, whatever that topic might be?
Right.
Or how does your cultural background, you know, influence your views on this or your experiences with this?
So really trying to understand their unique perspective and how their identity shapes how they see the world.
Exactly. And I think it's almost like the therapist is saying to the client, you know, teach me about your world.
Yeah.
Like, I'm here to learn from you. I don't have all the answers.
Right. It's creating a space for that shared learning and understanding.
Exactly. And this is where I think the research gets really interesting, because remember how we talk about, you know, how damaging microaggressions can be to the therapeutic relationship?
Right.
Well, this study actually found that experiencing microaggressions from a therapist directly impacted how clients perceived that therapist's cultural humility.
So it's like if a therapist says something that feels, you know, even a little bit off, it can make you question, you know, their whole approach and whether they really understand you.
Exactly. It's like it creates this kind of like trust barometer.
Right.
Where you come in expecting a certain level of understanding. And when that expectation is violated, it can be really hard to kind of rebuild that sense of safety and trust.
And the study found that when clients perceived their therapist as being less culturally humble, it actually predicted worse outcomes in therapy.
Right. So those clients, you know, they felt less connected to their therapist. They felt less understood. and they were less likely to feel like they were making progress.
Which makes total sense, right?
I mean,
if you don't feel like your therapist really gets you, it's going to be hard to do that deep work.
Right. And so what does this all mean, you know, for people who are seeking therapy?
Right. That's a big question.
I think it really underscores the importance of finding a therapist who not only has, you know, the right credentials and expertise, but also demonstrates cultural humility.
So someone who you feel like is really committed to understanding your unique identity and experiences.
Exactly. And who's willing to, you know, do that ongoing work of self-reflection and learning.
So then how do we actually do that? You know, how do we find those therapists who are really committed to this work?
That is a great question. And I think that there are a lot of different things that people can do to kind of, you know, vet therapists and figure out, you know, is this going to be a good fit for me?
So what are some things that people should be looking for or questions they should be asking, you know, when they're trying to find a therapist?
Yeah. So I think one of the first things is, you know, paying attention to how the therapist talks about their own approach to therapy.
Okay.
So are they talking about cultural humility? Are they talking about, you know, being aware of their own biases?
And not just saying it, but like actually demonstrating it.
Right, exactly. Because I think, you know, anybody can say the right words, but it's really about like, how are they embodying those values in their practice?
So what are some other things that people can look for? You know, maybe like red flags or warning signs that a therapist might not be as culturally sensitive as they could be.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest red flags is if a therapist dismisses or minimizes your experiences based on your identity.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if you share something about your cultural background or a specific challenge you're facing, and they say something like, oh, everyone feels that way sometimes.
Right.
Or, you know, I don't think that's really related to your, you know, whatever that identity might be.
Yeah.
That's kind of a sign that they're not really attuned to the nuances of your experience.
Right. It's like they're trying to fit you into this box that doesn't quite fit.
Exactly. And on the flip side.
Yeah.
You know, what are some green flags or things that suggest that a therapist might be a good fit in terms of cultural humility?
I would imagine, you know, a therapist who's willing to acknowledge their own limitations and biases would be a good sign.
Definitely.
So someone who says, you know, I haven't worked with a lot of clients from your background.
Right.
But I'm really eager to learn and understand your perspective.
That's a perfect example.
Yeah.
Because it shows that they're, you know, open about their own learning process and that they're committed to ongoing professional development.
So it's like they're saying, I'm not perfect. I don't know everything, but I'm willing to learn from you.
Exactly. And I think that that's so important for clients to hear because it creates that sense of safety and trust that we were talking about earlier.
Okay. So let's say you're already in therapy and your therapist says something that feels like a microaggression.
Right.
What should you do?
That can be a really tricky situation to navigate.
Yeah, because on the one hand, you don't want to let it slide.
Right.
But on the other hand, you know, it can feel intimidating to challenge your therapist.
Definitely. And I think it's important to remember, you know, you always have the right to speak up and share your feelings.
Okay.
But I also understand, you know, that hesitation that people might feel to kind of, you know, challenge their therapist because there's this power dynamic there.
Right.
But I think, you know, a good therapist is going to want to know if they've said something that's caused you harm.
Right. They should be open to that feedback.
Exactly. And so you could try saying something like, you know, when you said that, it made me feel, you know, whatever those feelings are.
Okay.
You know, can we talk about
that? So it's more of an invitation to dialogue.
Exactly. And I think that that's really important because it's not about, you know, accusing the therapist of being insensitive.
Yeah.
It's about, you know, expressing your own experience and how that comment impacted you.
And if the therapist responds defensively or dismisses your concerns, you know, that could be a sign that it's not a good fit.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's so important to pay attention to those cues and how the therapist responds to feedback, because that tells you a lot about their willingness to, you know, really do this work.
So it sounds like, you know, finding a culturally humble therapist is an ongoing process.
Yeah.
It involves asking the right questions, being attuned to those red flags, and advocating for your own needs.
Absolutely. And I think it's important to remember, too, that, you know, even with the most well-intentioned therapist, mistakes can happen.
Right.
I mean, we're all human.
Yeah.
And so I think what matters most is how they respond to those mistakes.
Okay.
Are they willing to listen? Are they willing to learn? Are they willing to repair the rupture that might have happened in that relationship?
So as we wrap up this deep dive, what's the one thing you want our listeners to take away from this conversation?
I think the biggest takeaway is that therapy can be such a powerful tool for healing or growth.
Absolutely.
But it's essential to find a therapist who truly sees you and respects you for who you are. And so don't be afraid to ask questions. Advocate for your needs and trust your gut when it comes to finding the right fit.
Yeah, and remember, cultural humility is a journey, not a destination.
Right.
It's something that we can all strive to be more aware of, you know, our own biases, and be more open to understanding the experiences of others.
Thank you so much for joining us for this deep dive on microaggressions and the importance of cultural humility in therapy.
We'll see you next time. Okay, so let's say you're already in therapy and your therapist says something that feels like a microaggression. What should you do?
That can be a really tricky situation to navigate.
Yeah, because on the one hand, you don't want to let it slide.
Right.
And on the other hand, you know, it can feel kind of intimidating to like challenge your therapist.
Definitely. And I think it's important to remember that, you know, you always have the right to speak up and to share your feelings with them.
Right.
But I also understand that hesitation that people might feel around, like, you know, challenging their therapist.
Yeah.
Because there is that power dynamic there, right?
Right.
But I think, you know, a good therapist is going to want to know if they said something that has caused you harm.
Right. Like, they should be open to feedback.
Exactly. And so, you know, you could try saying something like, you know, when you said blank, it made me feel, and then, you know, just share whatever those feelings are.
Okay.
You know, can we talk about that?
Okay. So it's more of like an invitation to dialogue.
Exactly. And I think that that's really important because it's not about, you know, accusing the therapist of being insensitive.
Right.
It's about expressing your own experience and how that comment impacted you.
And if the therapist responds defensively or dismisses your concerns, that could be a sign that, you know, maybe it's not a good fit.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's so important to pay attention to those cues and how the therapist responds to feedback, because it tells you a lot about their willingness to, you know, really do this work.
So it sounds like, you know, finding a culturally humble therapist is an ongoing process.
Yeah.
It involves asking the right questions, being attuned to those red flags, and advocating for your own needs.
Absolutely. And I think it's important to remember, too, that, you know, even with the most well-intentioned therapist, mistakes can happen.
Right. We're all human.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so, you know, what matters most is how they respond to those mistakes.
Okay.
Are they willing to listen? Are they willing to learn? And are they willing to repair the rupture that might have happened, you know, in that relationship?
So as we wrap up this deep dive, what's the one thing you want our listeners to take away from this conversation about microaggressions in therapy?
I think the biggest takeaway is that therapy can be such a powerful tool for healing and growth.
Absolutely.
But it's essential to find a therapist who truly sees you and respects you for who you are. And so, you know, don't be afraid to ask questions, advocate for your needs, and trust your gut when it comes to finding the right fit.
And remember, cultural humility is a journey, not a destination.
Right.
We can all strive to be more aware of, you know, our own biases and more open to understanding the experiences of others.
Well, thank you so much for joining us for this deep dive on microaggressions and the importance of cultural humility in therapy.
We'll see you next time for another deep dive.